I'll invite you to turn to the book of Daniel. We have a lot to cover tonight, and I hope I can get through it. And if not, we'll just stop at the right time, and I'll pick it up and try to make up later. But this is a period of time that is so full of events, and I kind of hate to stop in the middle of something. I like to get to the end. I didn't quite get to the end last time, so we're going to start off in just a moment with Alexander the Great in Egypt, and we'll see what happens to him from there. For the classes coming up, I've talked with Alan Adams, and he is going to teach us next, the first class for the next series, from January through March, on Jesus in the Old Testament. I mean, you've got types, you've got promises, you've got prophecies, you've got teachings, and he can't cover that in 13 weeks. But he'll give us the idea of how the Old Testament brings us to Jesus. And it'll kind of be a summary of what we've been doing for these last few classes here. And then Dan Jones, his father was a preacher, and he was a preacher in the days before PowerPoint. And before PowerPoint, if you wanted to illustrate something, you got some big charts, like sheets and things. And I don't know if they were probably better material than sheets, but you painted those lessons up off those sheets. And he has stacks and stacks of his father's sermon charts. So I'm going to advertise this next one to preachers, really. If you want to see some of those old sermon chart sermons, then he'll do that. They still work very good if the room isn't too large. You know, you get some of these big churches, no, you can't see it up there. And then there's those that try to convert these to PowerPoints and use them. And there's kind of ways you can do that, but still. There's two things that I think one of these days are going to be real valuable. And that is the hand-painted paintings behind the baptistry. Now, the kind you just buy and put on, that's not. But those painted by hand, I just think that's going to be a real valuable thing someday. And then these old sheet charts, that's going to be Southern folk art one of these days. You know, folks are going to go all over the countryside bragging about getting a hold of one of those. So we got some Rembrandts out there. And he'll be showing us that. We're going to begin with a prayer, but before we do, we've had a prayer request. There's going to be, I've heard, as many as 700 of the Tennessee National Guard going to the Mideast, and I don't understand that at all, but we need to pray for them, okay, as we really do our military everywhere, but we'll pray for them on their way. Anything else before we begin tonight? Let's have that prayer. Father in heaven, we're thankful for thy blessings, for thy word, for the way that you have shown us that thou art God by knowing what will come to pass. And Father, we trust thee for what will come to pass in the future in our lives. And we have a special prayer tonight for those members of the Tennessee National Guard that are going to the Mideast. We pray you'll be with every one of them and bring them home safe. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
Let's get to our class. We left Alexander in Egypt. Now, that little arrow there points to where Alexandria was to be built. Alexander got there and says, I'm going to start a Greek city right here. And he called it after himself, Alexandria. He had no lack of self-esteem, did he? So Alexandria is here. And Alexandria becomes the second largest city in the Roman Empire. And so we're going to talk about Alexandria a little more in just a minute. But then you see where he goes out into the desert, the place called Amun. Is that up there? Yeah, Amun, way over there in the desert. Alexander made several things like this while he was out conquering the world, like riding around Troy, going to Gordia to cut the Gordian knot, and then going to Amun. It was an oasis out in the Sahara Desert. It was a place where you go out and you could get lost in the desert sands, and there's no road because any road would be soon covered by the blowing sand that was there. He got out there with his men, not all his army. He left most of them in Egypt. He crossed those dunes and navigated himself over to this oasis where there was a temple. And there was supposed to be like an oracle would be delivered there. And the priest came out of that temple with an oracle for Alexander, according to Alexander. And it says he was the son of Amon. Well, Amon is a Greek god. His mother always told him that Philip wasn't his father, that he was conceived by a snake. That's what she said. Well, that was a god, Amon. And so Alexander, because he's the son of Amon, he is Pharaoh. So Alexander comes back to Egypt and says, I'm Pharaoh. And the Egyptians just loved it. They were so tired of the Persians that instead of him taking an army and conquering Egypt, he just had to ride in on his horse as a liberator, and they all just rejoiced that he was there. Now, part of that is because there were many Greeks in Egypt at this time. The Greeks were seafarers and traders, and many of them had gone to Egypt, and the Egyptians were used to dealing with the Greeks. They liked them better than the Persians, and so he came as a liberator. He left Egypt and went to Jerusalem. He comes to Jerusalem, and the high priest knows that he is coming. And he puts on all his priestly garments, and he goes out to meet Alexander. And Alexander's pretty impressed with that. And Alexander tells the high priest, who was high priest at that time, I forgot his name, but he was the high priest at that time, I want Jerusalem to help me conquer Persia. And the high priest told Alexander, look, you got to understand the Jews. We are a covenant people. And we promised Darius that we would not go up against him as long as he lived. Well, Alexander thinking about that. He says, well, would you offer a sacrifice for me? And they said, yeah, come on to the temple. They brought him to the temple, and in the Jewish fashion, as best as they knew how to do, they offered a sacrifice to Alexander. Well, he was pretty impressed. He thought, you know, they're not going to help me, but these are people of integrity. He said, look, I'm building a city down in Egypt named Alexandria, and I'd like y'all to come help me build that city, and you'll be welcome there. So many Jews moved to Alexandria, and they kept moving during the time of Alexander, during the time of the Ptolemies. And I read one place that during the days of Christ, there were more Jews in Alexandria than there was in Judea. And when they got down there, one of the big things was their library. They were trying to collect the scrolls from all over the world. And there's the greatest collection of ancient scrolls anywhere in the world in the library at Alexandria. And the Jews, since there was such a Greek influence going on during these Ptolemies, said, we need to translate our Bible into Greek. And so they had these Jewish scholars that knew the Hebrew and spoke the Greek, and they translated the Old Testament out of the Hebrew into the Greek. This is about 200 years before Christ. And they called it the Septuagint. Now, you'll hear about the Septuagint every now and then. It's one of the first translations of the Bible from Hebrew into Greek, and pretty much becomes the Old Testament of the New Testament church. But I'm going to let Kevin Key tell us more about the Septuagint when he comes and talks about the literature between the periods. Well, Alexander went on out. He was conquering everything. He got all the way over to India, and his soldiers said, look, We don't want to cross this Indus River. We've gone far enough. And it kind of disappointed him. He wanted to go. He heard there was more people further on. He wanted to conquer everything. But the soldiers rebelled against him. One of the problems Alexander had, he wanted to spread Greek culture all over the world. But more and more, he let the world culture influence him. His idea of being Pharaoh in Egypt, and he let the Egyptians over there bow down to him. No, Greek soldiers, ain't that's not Greek. You don't bow down to men like that. You know, they didn't like that. But Alexander's kind of soaking it up. He got over there in Persia, and he wanted them to bow down to him. And then he wanted his own men to bow down to him. They would follow his orders, but they didn't want to bow down to him. And more, as Alexander was spreading Greek culture, he was picking up Eastern culture for himself. And that's kind of one of the interesting things, how that went kind of back that way. Well, Alexander got back. He's having trouble with one of his generals. Just another exploit of Alexander. One of his generals giving him some trouble. He invited him to a banquet and said, "Look, let's have a drinking contest." They got to drinking. And that general won the drinking contest. They got that last big drought. Said, "Go first." That fella drunk it. And Alexander said, "Beat me." Everybody was surprised. Nobody ever beat Alexander at anything. But that they were both so drunk sick that about 2 or 3 days later, that general died. So Alexander had him drink himself to death. That's what he did. Alexander recovered. But it wasn't long after that, at 33 years old, he got to drinking again. And this man that could conquer the world could not conquer his own self. And he drank himself to death. And when he did, and the generals gathered around as he was dying and said, "To whom do you leave your kingdom?" And he said, "To the strongest." Well, that set off quite a battle between those generals. There was about 7 or 8 of them fighting it out. They made different allegiances, and it boiled down to these 4 that we've talked about, the 4 heads of the leopard, you know, that we talked about, and the 4 horns that came up on the ram. All right, so you got, and the ones we want to focus on are the Seleucus kings and the Ptolemy kings. Now, I'm going to call them Syrian kings and Egyptian kings, but they're Greeks. Don't forget that they're all Greeks. And the Bible's going to call them the kings of the north and the kings of the south. I'll show you that in just a minute. But you see that arrow. Seleucus started him a city. Now, he didn't name it after himself. He named it after his father, Antiochus. And that is Antioch. It grew and prospered like Alexandria did. And Antioch became the 3rd largest city in the Roman Empire. That's where the Christians, that's where the disciples were called Christians first, at Antioch. And the Jews had their own quarter there in Antioch, like they had at Alexandria. So that's kind of interesting as well. He also established another smaller city, Seleucia, that was right down at the end of the river on the Mediterranean Sea. He named that one after himself. And so we're going to read about those cities in the book of Acts. Now, we're into this period, the Egyptian era, the Syrian era, and that's about the number of years that they had conquered Judah and Jerusalem. So into this Greek period, and I want us to go back to the scriptures. Let's see. I'm going to do this real quick. I might get back to it in another class. But it's going to talk about a little horn that waxed exceeding great. Okay? A little horn that waxed exceeding great. Well, he's going to talk about by him the daily sacrifice was taken away. And the place of the sanctuary was cast down. And it's going to talk about how that then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. Here's what this is talking about in Daniel 8. And I'm going to save this for next week to get further into it. Well, a little more. When it's explaining this, Daniel 8:23, the king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up. And it says, he shall destroy wonderfully and shall prosper and practice and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. Now that's the Jews. And then it says, he shall magnify himself in his heart and by peace shall destroy many. He shall stand up against the prince of princes, but he shall be broken without hand. What we're talking about here is Antiochus the fourth Epiphanes. Now, he's going to be an important character in those days between the Testaments. He is going to so oppress the Jews in such a manner that it's going to be horrible when we get into that. Until finally, the Maccabees are going to stand up against him. And so we're going to have Judas Maccabees, and he is actually going to be able to throw off the power of Antiochus the fourth Epiphanes and establish a time when they're ruling themselves. The Jews are, it's going to end with King Herod. I mean, it's, and I'll get into that next week. So that's a little preview of what's to come. Now, let's go back to the scriptures. Talked about history. So now we're going back to the scriptures for a while. Oh no. Is it doing it again? I hate that. Is it coming up any better?
No.
Tell me if it goes off. I don't know why it does that. Let's see. I don't know. We'll do the best we can. If it goes off, tell me. And I'll try to fix it. Did it come back up stronger? A little better?
Yes.
Okay, I'll just touch it every now and then. It's got some kind of rest in there. I got to get in here and figure that out. But it shouldn't have to say power because I got it plugged in. So I don't know. Okay. Daniel 11. In the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and to strengthen him. When Darius the Mede came and conquered Babylon, Daniel went over to Darius, said, look, I can help you out. I've been helping run this kingdom for many, many years. And they said, well, we'll see what Daniel can do. We read about this after the writing on the wall. In Daniel chapter 5, it talks about how Darius the Mede comes in and takes Babylon. And immediately after, in Daniel chapter 6, we have the story of Daniel in the lion's den. But I want you to look what it said in Daniel 11:1, in the first year of Darius the Mede. I'm not sure when he was thrown in the lion's den. It was sometime after he started rising in influence in that kingdom. So I put Daniel 11 between Daniel 5 and 6. Now, look, I've got this. If you ever see Rex Turner's commentary on Daniel, here, there it is. This is fascinating. And he goes through all these chronology. Now, he's not quite with me on this one, but I depend a lot on Rex Turner to get me through what we're fixing to get into, because it can really get confusing. Now, are you got your picture? Okay, I'm going on. Daniel 11:2 says this, I will now show thee the truth. Behold, there shall stand up yet three kings in Persia, and the fourth shall be far richer than they all. And by his strength, through his riches, he shall stir up all against the realm of Grecia. Well, Darius is the king, and I think that's Cyrus. I think, but it doesn't have to be. It could be they're ruling co-regently, but I think it's the same person. But then there's going to be three kings. There's Cambyses. That's the son of Cyrus. Cambyses killed his brother after Cyrus died. He got his brother put to death because he thought his brother was going to threaten to try to take over the kingdom. So he got his brother killed, and he went off to capture Egypt. And he did, but on his way home, he either killed himself or hurt himself getting on his horse, and he died on his way home. The reason he had to run home was because he heard his brother was trying to rule in Babylon. Well, how could that be? I thought I'd killed him, had him put to death. Well, it was this Smerdis. He was an imposter. He was telling people he was that brother. And Darius came in and said, look, this guy's not for real. So Darius started ruling. Darius, if you'll remember, is the one that came against the Greeks at Marathon. And remember, the Greeks defeated him and sent him back home. And then the fourth one, it says, and the fourth, three kings in Persia, that's Cambyses, Smerdis, and Darius. And the fourth, that's Xerxes, who in the Bible is called Ahasuerus. He's the one that had the million-man army that built the bridge that we talked about last time. And he couldn't defeat they sent him home. But he got the Greeks stirred up. And the Greeks stayed stirred up. And that's the reason the Greeks decided to go take Persia, you see. Boy, there's a lot in that second verse, isn't there? I mean, there's just a lot right there. Now, here's what we're going to do. A mighty king shall stand up. And look how I got that. I'm going to show you who these kings are as we go through this chapter. This is Alexander. Okay, Alexander the Great. A mighty king shall stand up that shall rule with great dominion and do according to his will. And when he shall stand up, his kingdom shall be broken and divided toward the four winds of heaven. Okay, we talked about those four kingdoms that came with Daniel died. Right. And not his prosperity, nor according to his dominion which he ruled, for his kingdom shall be plucked up even for others beside those. And the king of the south, Ptolemy the first, okay, shall be strong, and one of his, now this, and one of Alexander's princes, Seleucus the first, and he shall be strong above him. He's going to be stronger than Ptolemy. And he'll have dominion, and his dominion shall be a great dominion. Here's what we're about to do. This is going to be hard to follow, okay? But I'm trying to make it easy. Here's the Seleucus. That's king of the north. Ptolemy, king of the south. And this is the king of the south. Now, there's a bunch of Ptolemies here, and they all got a different name. But they're all also Ptolemy the first, and then the name, and I couldn't pronounce all those names. Now, and you wouldn't remember them if I tried to. So I'm just going to call them Ptolemy. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So we got a bunch of Ptolemy. All of them are going to be called the king of the south in Daniel chapter 11. And then we've got the kings of the north, and I'm going to give you their names. It's Seleucus the first, Antiochus the first, Antiochus the second, Seleucus the second, Antiochus the great, Seleucus the fourth, and Antiochus IV Epiphanes. So you know you won't get that mixed up, will you? Okay, I'm going to try to follow that through as we go. And you don't have to remember all of this. There's a couple you really need to remember here. But I think I can lead you through this. And you kind of see this is going down through the generations in Daniel chapter 11. So we talked about Ptolemy the first and Seleucus the first. Now, we're not going to read about Ptolemy the second and Antiochus the first. But they didn't get along. Each of them trying to dominate the other. And there's always this war then. And with Jerusalem right between Egypt and Syria, all this war kept coming through the land of Canaan and Jerusalem. And they're going back and forth and back and forth. And that's what this chapter is going to tell you about. But while they're fighting, it says at the end of the years, this is Daniel 11:6. They shall join themselves together. Now that's these two kingdoms. The Seleucus kingdom and the Ptolemy. They'll join themselves together for the king's daughter of the south. Now that's Berenice, I think is the right way to say that. It looks like Bernice, but when I checked it, I think they said Berenice. Berenice. Now, she's the daughter of Ptolemy III. Ptolemy III thought, you know, this is just hurting both of us. I got an idea. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to send my daughter over to Antiochus II, and he can marry her. And then they'll have a child, and we'll let that child rule both kingdoms, and we'll quit this fighting with one another like that. Well, now that sounds like a real neat plan, you know, get a wedding and have a peace and have everybody come together and stop fighting like this. Here was the problem. Antiochus II was already married. And Ptolemy III says, well, you could just divorce her and marry my daughter. Well, he thought about that and says, yeah, that might work. And everybody thought it was a good idea, but his first wife, she did not think that was a good idea. And she didn't like that at all. And so they made this agreement, but it says she did not retain the power of her arm. Here's what happened. Neither shall he stand up, nor his arm, but she, that's Berenice, shall be given up. And they that brought her, and he that beget her, Ptolemy III, he's going to be given up. And he that strengthened her in these times, that's Antiochus II, fellowship, he'll be given up. Here's what happened. They got over there, and they had this all worked out. But Antiochus II really didn't care for this Ptolemy lady very much. He didn't care for Berenice. He kind of liked his first wife. He's tired of her being mad at her and all. So Ptolemy III, he died. And when he died, Antiochus II divorced Ptolemy III's daughter, Berenice. Now, she'd had a child, but he divorced her and sent her away. And then she and her child were poisoned. And they say they don't know who did it, but I got an idea who may have done it. You remember how that woman was so mad about that? He went back to his first wife. But I tell you, man, you don't want to mess with your wife this way. It's hard for them to get over this. And she had a hard time forgiving him. And so after she remarried him, she was still mad at him. So she poisoned him. And he died. Well, since she knew how to poison people, kind of makes me think how those first two might have got poisoned. You know, but they never been able to prove it. But that whole plan just fell apart. I mean, everybody died. And so they're back to square one. But it's worse than that. It's worse than square one. They made things worse by this scheme of this marriage and all. It didn't work out. Here we are. We're down to Ptolemy III and Antiochus II. That's who we've been talking about. Well, the next verse. But out of a branch of her roots shall one stand up in his estate, Ptolemy IV. Now, that's her brother. Okay, that's the son of another son. That's the son of Ptolemy III. Called it a branch. That's her brother. And he didn't like the way they did his sister. So, when he shall come with an army, he'll enter the fortress of the king of the north. Now, that's Lucius II. Okay? So, that was the son of this Antiochus II. That was his son. So, you got another generation coming. He shall deal against them and he shall prevail. So the Ptolemy, he's gonna overpower the Seleucid kings. And they shall carry captives into Egypt, and their gods with their princes, with their precious vessels of silver and gold, and he'll continue more years than the king of the north, Seleucus II. So here's what happens. Ptolemy IV, he goes over there, he takes over the kingdom from Seleucus II, and he outlives him. So he's still king when Seleucus II dies, and he's pretty much dominated things. Well, it doesn't stay that way. We're going to the next generation now. It says here, now this is where it's real confusing. Okay. The King James Version reads it this way. So the king of the south, now that'd be Ptolemy IV, okay. The king of the south shall come into his kingdom and shall return into his own land. Well, what's that talking about? Here's how the American Standard Version words this. And it might be some little difference in text or something, but generally they think the American Standard Version may have got this better than the King James Version, this verse. It says, and he, Seleucus II, shall come into the realm of the king of the south, Ptolemy IV, but he shall return to his own land. What happened, the Seleucid king? He came over to Egypt, but it didn't do much good. I mean, he kind of drove them off and beat them back, but he wasn't able to take Egypt, and he decided he'd go back home. So, his son. Now, son's plural. There's two boys. He had two boys. One that's Carinaeus. That sound pretty good? Okay. And then Antiochus the Great. They're the sons of Seleucus II. They're going to be stirred up. These boys, they think, we're going to do something about this. So, they assemble a multitude of great forces. And one shall certainly come and overflow and pass through, then he shall return and be stirred up even to his fortress. During all this, Carinaeus, he was kind of hitting things up, but he died. And so little brother now, Antiochus, who becomes Antiochus, he takes over this great army coming down from the north and going over there to fight with the king of the south. The king of the south, this is Ptolemy the fifth, see, we're going down the generations now. Ptolemy V, he'll be moved to Corinth. It made him mad. That's what it did. It just made him mad for these boys to bring this army back to him after he'd driven them off. They'd already driven them off once, and here they come back. Now he's mad. So, he'll come forth and fight with him, even the king of the north. So he's going to fight with Antiochus the Great. All right? And he shall set forth a great multitude, but the multitude shall be given into his hand. Ptolemy V was able to defeat Antiochus the Great. That's where we are. See how we've moved down the generations now. Ptolemy V and Antiochus the Great. That's how we've come down through these kings. All right, let's see what happens next. And when he had taken away the multitude, his heart shall be lifted up, and he shall cast down many 10,000s. But he, Ptolemy V, shall not be strengthened by it. He did all this, but he didn't really take over. He did all that, but it didn't strengthen him much. He was able to defeat them, but he didn't know how to follow up on that. The king of the north, this is Antiochus the Great again. He shall return and set forth a multitude greater than the former, and shall certainly come after certain years with a great army and much riches. So, Antiochus the Great, he's going to try again to whip these Ptolemies. See how they just keep fighting. Well, in those times, there shall many stand up against the king of the south. Now we're getting down to Ptolemy VI. Okay? Also, the robbers of thy people shall exalt themselves to establish the vision. They shall fail. So the king of the north, this is Antiochus the Great, he shall come and cast up a mount and shall take most of the fenced cities, and arms of the south shall not withstand, neither his chosen people. That's the Jews. He's going to take over the Jews. Neither shall thou be any strength to withstand. That's Antiochus the Great's going to get the upper hand now for a while. Daniel, okay, here we are. We got Antiochus the Great. He's fighting against this Ptolemy VI. See how we've come down the generations. Now, he shall come against him and shall do according to his will. This is Antiochus the Great. And none shall stand before him, and he shall stand in the glorious land, by which his hand shall be consumed. That would be Israel. See, the Jews. The glorious land. That's what Daniel calls it. Now, he shall also set his face to enter with the strength of his whole kingdom, the upright ones with him, thus shall he do, and he, this is Antiochus the Great, shall give Ptolemy the Fourth, the daughter of women, Cleopatra. Now, this is not the Cleopatra. Shakespeare wrote that play about Antony and Cleopatra, and we're going to talk about that because that's going to come up later. But this is some great-great-great-grandmother of hers. There were a bunch of Antiochuses, bunch of Seleucids, bunch of Ptolemies, and a bunch of Cleopatras. And boy, it gets so hard keeping all these stories straight about who we're talking about. But here's what happened. Antiochus the Great had Egypt right where he wanted them. But you remember how big that Seleucid kingdom was? Well, he's got trouble. He's got trouble elsewhere. And he couldn't finish this off. So he said, I got to wrap this Egypt thing up. I tell you what I'll do. I'll get Cleopatra, my daughter. I'll get her to marry Ptolemy the Sixth. And I'll kind of dominate him through her. You know how a woman can dominate her husband? That Cleopatra, she's so headstrong. He knew her. She is headstrong, and she'll be able to dominate him. And I'll just manipulate him through her, and then I'll go off and take care of this other stuff. Well, it didn't work like that. None of these plans ever seemed to work like you think, because Cleopatra was very headstrong, very independent and headstrong, and she got over there. It said the daughter of women, that's Cleopatra, corrupting her, but she shall not stand on his side, neither be for him. She got over there and decided she kind of liked this Ptolemy fella and took his side instead of her daddy's side. And he wasn't able to get anything done through her. In fact, it kind of turned against him here. So that deal didn't work out either. After this, this is Antiochus the Great. He turned his face to the isles. See, he had this idea. I can just keep conquering stuff, and I'll be the next ruler of the world. So he decided he'd go conquer those Greek islands. Well, he got over there marching across Asia Minor with his army. But it says a prince for his own behalf shall cause the reproach offered by him to cease. Without his own reproach, he shall cause it to turn upon him. He came up and the Romans showed up. Now the Romans had this idea too. That, hey, somebody needs to conquer the world. And this Antiochus the Great's getting a little bit too big for his britches. So we're not ready to take on the world yet, but we're not going to let him do it. So they got over there and they stopped him. And they made a treaty with him, and it was real bad. He had to pay for the war. He had to give up everything that was west of Tarsus. And he had to let his son be taken captive to Rome. So that's what he did. Those Romans really humiliated Antiochus the Great. Well, he turned around. He'll turn his face toward the fort of his own land, and he shall stumble and fall and not be found. So he went back home, and then he died. So we come to his son, Seleucus the Fourth. Then shall stand up his, Seleucus the Fourth, his estate, and he'll have a raiser of taxes. Now this guy was pretty powerful too. Heliodorus. Now Heliodorus decided, you make me tax collector and I'll make you a rich king. So he went down and he came down through Israel and he raised their taxes and he's gathering all their taxes. And it really made the Jews mad at him, you know, to have all their stuff taken away by these taxes. He says, he'll raise her taxes in the glory of the kingdom, but within a few days, he shall be destroyed. Now this is Seleucus the Fourth. He's going to be destroyed. Here's what happened. Heliodorus was getting so powerful that he thought he could knock off the king. And so Seleucus the Fourth was poisoned by Heliodorus. But Heliodorus didn't last long after that either. Neither in anger nor in battle. His estate shall stand up a vile person. Antiochus the Fourth Epiphanes. Now, he was the one that had been captive in Rome when he was a boy. He had been raised by the Romans. And he had come back home and he saw what Heliodorus did to his brother, and he got rid of Heliodorus. He decided, I'm going to be king. And he thought he really knew what he was doing. Now, to whom they shall not give the honor of the kingdom, but he shall come in peaceably to gain the kingdom by flatteries. And with the arms of a flood shall they be overflown before him, and shall be broken, yea, also the prince of the covenant. That'd be the high priest. This fella, he got down there and saw what was going on in Jerusalem. And when the high priest wouldn't go along with what he thought, he just appointed another one. And it really upset the Jews, because the high priest he appointed wasn't of the tribe of Levi. He was of the tribe of Benjamin. But he appointed him anyway. And the Jews thought, you know, this is not right. This isn't right. This, and Peter. But now a lot of the Jews were for this guy. So the Jews were divided. I'm going to show you that. That really turned out bad too. So we're down here this far with Ptolemy the sixth, Seleucus the fourth, and now we're at Antiochus the fourth Epiphanes. That's where we got. And here's the Ptolemy the fourth. All right. Now, Antiochus the fourth Epiphanes. He's the chosen of God. That's kind of what Epiphanes mean. He's a manifestation of God. He'd think that name for himself. That kind of shows his self-esteem, wasn't it? But the Jews had a nickname for him, Antiochus the fourth Epimanes. They called him the fool. And so you're going to see how this plays out here a little bit. The Jews, well, some of the Jews went right along with him, but a lot of them didn't like him. After the league be made with him, he shall work deceitfully. He was a conniving fellow. Okay. He shall come up and shall be strong with a small people. He shall enter peaceably upon the fattest places of the province. He shall do that which his fathers have not done, nor his fathers' fathers. I mean, see, all these guys, they kind of let the Jews take care of themselves. He wasn't going to do it. He's going to make the Jews do his way. He shall scatter among them prey and spoil and riches. Yea, he shall forecast his devices against the strongholds even for a time, and shall stir up his power and his courage against the king of the south. Now we're down to Ptolemy the eighth. All right, the next generation. With great army. And the king of the south shall be stirred up to battle with a very great mighty army. Here they come together. But he shall not stand. They shall forecast devices against him. Yea, they that feed the portion of his meat shall destroy him, and his army shall overflow, and many shall fall down slain. I mean, they just have terrible battles where everybody's getting killed. And both of these kings' hearts shall be able to do mischief, and they shall speak lies at one table. Here's what they do. They say, look, oh man. They say, let's try diplomacy. And they'd sit there at the table. They just lied to each other about what they were going to do. I mean, neither one of them had any plans to carry out the agreements they were making with one another. So, but it shall not prosper, for the end shall be at the time appointed. So we're down here to these kings now. The story's almost over. Maybe I can get this done. Okay? Then shall he, Antiochus the fourth Epiphanes, return to his own land with great riches, and his heart shall be against the Holy Covenant. He's going to turn on the Jews. He shall do exploits and return to his own land. At the time appointed, he shall return and come toward the south, but it shall not be as the former as the latter, for the ships of Chittim roam again. We got to stop this fella. He's trying to take Egypt. The Romans show up again. This time, to tell him, you back off of Egypt. So, he shall come against him, and it made him mad. He'll be grieved in return, and he takes his anger out on the Jews, his indignation against the Holy Covenant. So will he do. He shall return and have intelligence with them that forsake the Holy Covenant, the Hellenists. These are the Jews that wanted the Greek culture. They joined in with Antiochus the fourth of Epiphanes. And arms shall stand on his part. They shall pollute the sanctuary of strength. They shall take away the daily sacrifice. They shall place the abomination that maketh desolate. Such shall do wickedly against the covenant. He corrupt by flatteries. The people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. That's the Hasmoneans. You're going to find in Israel, they're divided between the Hellenists that want to be like Greeks and the Hasmoneans that want to keep their traditional Jewish culture. Oh, this is going to turn into something really amazing here. And they that understand among the people shall instruct many. They shall fall by the sword and by flame, by captivity, and spoil many days. Those Hasmoneans, they are really going to have it rough. They're going to wander around in sheep's clothing and live in caves and just, I mean, they're really going to get beaten up by these Hellenists and Alexander Epiphanes. But then when the time shall fall, they shall be hopened with a little help. This is where Judas Maccabees comes in, when all looks lost. But many shall cling to them with their flatteries. Some of them understanding shall fall to try them and purge to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed. Well, we went through a lot. I'm not going to go through this. Daniel 36 to the end of the chapter is really kind of a summary of what all we went through. It's going to tell it again, kind of like a summary. But right there at verse 45, he shall plant the tabernacles of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. What do you think that is? That's Jerusalem. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. Antiochus Epiphanes is going to try to turn the temple in Jerusalem into a shrine of Zeus and sacrifice pigs. It's not going to work. Next week, the Maccabees. Okay? Well, I went through so much. I hope you was able to follow. You don't get the details. You got the general picture, don't you? The fight and the... And the amazing thing is how Daniel explained it all in such detail. All before it happened. I mean, that's just amazing, isn't it? That's just amazing. So, next week, the Maccabees. And that's quite a heroic story. We'll get to there then. We'll go back to history for a while. Let's have a prayer. Father in heaven, we're thankful for our blessings. We're thankful for the joy we have with one another, with our word, and for the food prepared. In Jesus' name, amen. I didn't mean to go 5 minutes longer.